Welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast. I'm David James from 360 Learning, and each episode I chat with guests about what lights them up in the world of people development. In this episode, I'm speaking with Gabe Gloger from ETS about the lean and innovative approach they've adopted in the L&D function at ETS, and how automation has played a crucial role in their success. But before we get into it, if you're enjoying this podcast, please do give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app of choice to help others to find us, and thank you if you've done so already. Now, let's get into it. Gabe, welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast.
Thank you, David. I'm delighted to be here.
Gabe, your learning and development team has gone through some changes and you find yourself very much in a lean L&D team right now. Could you explain to us your journey towards lean at ETS, please?
Sure. So when I joined ETS back in the fall of 2019, I spoke a lot with the team. And one of the things I kept saying is, you know, we feel like order takers right now, which is, I think, something you hear. It's not uncommon to hear that in L&D, right? And the sense was that clients would come to them saying, hey, here's the kind of training that I need. They would sort of take notes and say, okay, then they'd go off and either build that training or deliver that training. And it was a fairly transactional relationship. I have been listening actually to this podcast a lot at the time and just concerned with performance in general. And so we spent the next 6 or 7 months really working hard to transform ourselves into a real client-focused performance consultants, so that when the client would come to us with a training challenge and say, okay, that's interesting, let's talk a little bit more about that, right? And we dig into the performance needs. And then we would go talk with some of the people that were actually having that challenge. And it was a very high touch, client centric, performance oriented approach that we had. And it was great. We had little teams, each with an advisor and a designer and a marketer. And that worked really well until March 2020, when COVID hit and sort of chaos was unleashed a little bit. When a big part of your business model involves getting lots of people into a small room, pandemics are bad for business. Yeah. So ETS did a great job of pivoting quickly, and they've adapted to that new reality quite well. But it wasn't without some difficult decisions to be made. So the learning team of about 10 people went to a team of one person. So it's me and my colleague Michelle Laguerre. And so we kind of looked at each other and said, how the heck are we going to do this? There's 2,500 people here and there's two of us. So I had to dig into kind of my bag of lean tactics that I had developed over the years. And we really went from being client focused to being problem focused and really emphasizing digital marketing and delivery. At a high level, we've kind of identified a few key problems that are important across the organization. And then we try to leverage technology and a few other lean tricks to scale the way that we deliver those solutions.
Brilliant. Well, I'll come back to the problem-driven focus on digital marketing in a moment. But I want to ask you, Gabe, first, what are the principles you used in getting lean? Because I understand you're a student of lean yourself.
So I taught lean for a few years at a global education company. I was a lean startup coach and very much involved in like product management. So I think I took a lot of the principles from that product management mindset. But I've also lived lean. I started my own company a while ago called Cultivate Me. It was sort of like an L&D laboratory to explore some of my own ideas. And we took no investment money. So we had to run lean. So I sort of taught the theory of it and I've had to kind of learn and live it myself. And a lot of the principles that came away from that were, ideas like jobs to be done, experimentation and iteration, building minimally viable things, understanding things like customer funnels. So when we were faced with the L&D challenge that we had, we said, okay, there's a few things we just can't do anymore. Like we can't do extensive client discovery on every inbound learning request. And man, we were good at discovery, but we couldn't do it at scale anymore. We couldn't do custom content creation for like every single client, especially if they had a small audience. And we knew we couldn't address every single learning need that was out there. So we honed in on a few principles. One was using technology to amplify our reach. Mm-hmm. Another was creating channels for regular dialogue with our customers, not strictly through a client, not strictly through one-on-one, you know, kind of user interviews, if you will, but a broader community dialogue kind of approach. Another was to really focus on our niche or find a niche. You know, much like a startup does, is you don't want to try and boil the ocean, right? You want to find that little niche that you kind of really dominate and grow from there. And so we had the same approach. We knew we were going to have to leverage vendors and the internet and kind of get out of the content creation business to a certain degree. And then we really wanted to build and leverage community. There's a lot of wisdom, experience, and intelligence across an organization of 2,500 people. So we wanted to find, you know, subject matter experts and engage social learning and do co-creation and even use some social pressure to increase fidelity. And then the last principle that we wanted to do was, you know, how can we, I like to say, get people to hitch a ride on their day job, but how can we use people's everyday work as the curriculum for growth rather than having to recreate, you know, workplace scenarios in order to give practice opportunities? Like, people are doing this every day. Mm. How can we pull that into the learning experience and leverage that? So those are some of our big principles.
Yeah, brilliant. And we'll come back and explore hitch a ride on your day job a little later on. It's a fascinating principle. So taking a step back then, what do you mean by problem-driven focus and digital marketing delivery? And how does that compare and contrast to the norm that most of us will be used to in L&D?
Great question. I mean, I think our journey has actually mirrored a lot of that difference in that contrast with the norm, right? I think the sort of default state for a lot of L&D for decades has been a sort of glorified vendor management or content creators, you know, where the client has a problem, they describe it in the form of solution, and you just sort of say yes and go off and do it. And, you know, I think a much better approach is that performance consulting that I mentioned, where you dig deeper into the real performance needs and you do user interviews. But, you know, problem-driven focus, I think, starts with finding evergreen problems. I would say it's not necessarily an evolution from performance consulting in any way. I think it's just sort of an alternative approach when resources are really limited. Mm. So it starts with finding what I call evergreen problems. And so that's going to be, you know, friction, gaps that kind of cut across the whole organization, not just one team or department. And also that they're not likely to go away soon. They're sort of structural needs. And there's some classic L&D problems that fall under that, you know, like manager development or onboarding. Like, you're always going to be hiring people. You're always going to have new managers. But we looked for a number of those. And then, you know, I think researching those problems like a startup and really digging into understanding, like, what are the jobs to be done here? You know, describing the use cases, learning the language of the customer. How do they perceive and describe those jobs themselves? Is really important. And then, you know, thinking of yourself like a business and kind of building these like B2C offerings, you know, it's a very kind of product management oriented, like a startup would have products or have a product line. You want to do the same thing. Mm. And then you market those offerings to the organization. And this is something I think very different from traditional I don't want to speak too much about traditional. I don't make grand sweeping statements, but in my experience, this, you know, I think L&D is often kind of client focused. You know, you have the head of a department or division that sort of, you know, feels they understand a particular need within their part of the business. This is more like, how do we draw out of the woodwork all the people who have the greatest pain around this particular product, whether from this department, that department, or that division, right? And so that's where I think the digital marketing and delivery becomes huge, is finding ways to attract and screen even the right people for the right offerings. And so I think having the right technology tools is really important there. You know, it's where like Loop has been a huge advantage for us and Automate and things like that. But then, you get them out there, you market them, you put people through them, and then you try to just constantly gather feedback through multiple channels and iterate on those offerings. Again, I sound like a broken record, but it just like a startup would, that's trying to figure out how to optimize their product and optimize their understanding of the need in the marketplace.
Yeah. So what you're describing there, I've mentioned a few times on the podcast, Gabe, and there is this general confusion I find when I start a conversation with somebody who perhaps isn't as far down the road as we are, that instead of doing a top-down needs analysis, in which you're seeking to plug gaps in your offering that other people can experience, you're describing finding, exploring these evergreen problems for cohorts of individuals who are feeling actual pain to help them to do the stuff that they're trying to do better. Now, where the confusion often comes is when you're looking at just inverting a learning needs analysis, it looks like a free-for-all. It looks like you're just asking everybody what they want to learn. And what you're describing is a completely different track altogether. So you've got learning needs, top or bottom on one side. We're not going to touch that. We're going to go over to cohorts of people who are in your organization to do certain things, whether that is at a role level, whether that is on a job family level, whether it be within a hierarchy, whether it be within a function. They are here to do a thing, and or perhaps maturity. So you've got new starters, people have just been promoted, people are just moving in cohorts of people where periods of transition or where they're expected to adapt means that they have a need now. And if learning and development are there, you can make a business critical impact to what it is that they're trying to do rather than. And what happens a lot of the time in learning and development, we try to fill their heads with stuff they can't possibly remember, or we neglect them way too long, way past the transition that they're expected to make, until they've figured out how to do it themselves, and then we try to fix them with best practice content. Am I on the right lines?
Oh, absolutely. I was going to add one little part, but you nailed it in the end, which is, I've seen that scenario where someone comes in and rightly identifies a need that people have. And you're like, okay, great. Let's get to work on this. Mm. And then it takes you like 4 months to build the experience. And then you're like, here it is. And they're like, yeah, that need was 4 months old. And I figured out another way. I just went to YouTube and like, it's okay. Yeah. I kind of solved it, but sorry, I've moved on. And so I think one of the things we try to do a lot with Lean, and this might be a good, maybe I'll explain some of our funnel, because I think it's appropriate here, is we try to create these sort of dragnets, I guess, to sort of catch people who have the needs when they have it. Mm. So maybe I'll explain kind of how we are like different levels of offerings in the framework we use to think about our sort of product portfolio, if that makes sense.
Yeah, please do.
So we organize our offerings into four categories based on pricing. Now, what do I mean when I say pricing, right? The employees of ETS are not paying us to take our courses. In the startup world, you never ask someone if they like your product. Because they'll just lie to you, and they're not being malicious. They just want to be polite, Yeah. And what you ask them to do instead is buy it. And that's sort of the true signal in Lean Startup is how can we get people to kind of like take their credit card out and demonstrate that this is truly an urgent need for them. But since our customers don't pay us for our offerings with money, we don't really get that true signal. And so I thought for a long time, like how do they pay? And it occurred to me that I think time is the real currency of learning. Mm. When people are evaluating whether to take your learning experience, they're likely asking themselves, is this worth my time? Because we're saying, hey, give us 10 minutes, give us half an hour, give us 2 days, right? And like, 2 days, my inbox is going to be a mess by the time I get back from it. Is it worth that inbox pilot, right? And so like a business, we kind of started structuring our offerings around price points. So we have sort of a customer funnel. It's a little bit messier than that in reality, but all frameworks are wrong. Some are useful, right? Uh, So at the top of the funnel, we have newsletters, which is sort of shorthand. We actually run newsletters, but we think of like resources as smaller things. And those cost minutes. So we put out monthly newsletters around our key kind of evergreen challenges, our sort of pillars. And people can read them or not. They can click on that, you know, YouTube link and watch that video or read that article. But, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes tops, like they're done with it. It's a sort of cheap exchange. It's a good way to it's an inexpensive exchange.
Yeah.
it's a good way for them to kind of test the waters and deliver a little value. The next level down would be meetups, which is, again, shorthand, but it's cost hours. And so we run meetups every single week around the topics that we're focused on. And it's an opportunity for people to just come together who have an interest around a particular topic and sort of share what it is that they're working on, that they're struggling with. And we try to have a mix of expertise levels and we all sort of solve it together. Mm. But it looks and feels just like any other meeting that you would put on your calendar, right? There's no out of office notification that's required for this. Your inbox isn't going to pile up afterwards. The next level down are workshops. And those are, you know, what people would traditionally think in terms of training. You know, it costs days. It's a half day here or a couple days there, you know, three sessions spread over a week, whatever. And then at the kind of lowest level or the sort of highest cost, if you will, would be courses. And those are measured in weeks. And we have a couple courses that we offer that happen over the course of 2 or 3 months, if you will. And so that's our customer funnel. And so what we're always doing is kind of running each of those. And so we're hearing people in meetups that have a certain challenge, or we're pushing out newsletters that people kind of respond to and reply to. And any of those, we can kind of solve a particular problem in a bunch of different ways. So if somebody says, I have this need, I don't have to say, all right, give me 3 months to build a workshop on it. I can say, oh, here's a few resources I can, you know, put out in the next newsletter, or you should definitely attend this meetup next week where we're going to be talking about that. Mm-hmm. And there's three other ETSers that have been right in your shoes like 2 months ago. So we're sort of always trying to sense and respond. And then that's always informing like what we need to build in terms of offerings as well.
Mm. It sounds, what I like about that is that that it's very much a yes and approach, isn't it? Somebody needs your help. You can help them immediately. You call them newsletters. You know, they could be resources, highly contextual to ETS, to the level that they're at. Get them going, as you said, you've got the meetups. There's something in the immediacy of the in which you're able to respond. But I wonder if we could take a step back, Gabe, because I'd like to know how you recognize the problems to be solved. We know how learning needs come to us. You know, we go out and we ask, you know, what the learning needs are, or sometimes a request will come in and we'll gather the information. But I wonder, when it comes to an actual problem, of course, it's not a learning need. We're not looking to gather topics to put into a course. What are the steps that you'll take to validate and identify the actual problems to be solved?
Yeah, great question. That's an ongoing process, but there's a couple major, beats or milestones to it, I would say. So let me give the answer, at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we have four, pillars that we've had, these sort of evergreen problems that we've chosen to focus on through this process. And that's, building better people managers, increasing digital fluency, leveling up product management, and improving cross-functional teaming. How do we work together? Mm. And so how did we arrive at those choices? For me, it started with talking with lots of people and particularly, you know, business leaders across the organization. And I took a page out of your book. One of my favorite questions that I heard you mention on one of the podcasts many moons ago was, just show up and ask, how's business?
Yeah.
It's such a great, simple question. And so I would sit down with, you know, vice presidents, managing directors, executive directors of different departments. And I'd say, like, how's business? What are you working on for the next year? What's going to be a success one, two, 3 years from now, if you can pull it off? What's got you up at night? You know, let's imagine that I also will do pre-mortems as well. Like, let's imagine that you've utterly failed to achieve this thing that you're trying to achieve. Why? Like, what's the biggest thing that's going to probably create that failure? Right. And so I'm just digging into the frictions and the tensions and the gaps and the risks that they're thinking about and taking copious notes. And I, you know, I did this with probably 20 people, 24 people across the organization. And you start to notice patterns, right? Yeah. Across all those conversations. And so then I just sort of made a list and started digging into each of those. I like to try, you know, the five whys, like, why is this a problem? And then why is that? And why is that? Until you try to get to sort of the bedrock of it. And then I try to prioritize those. So some of it is looking like, how wide is the problem? And then the other is looking at the potential impact of solving it. And this is why I gave those answers up front. So, you know, manager development is, it's kind of the bread and butter of L&D, but for a good reason, right? Like, managers are high leverage and there's managers across every division. So that was a sort of wide and obvious problem. Digital fluency was something that was really important to us, as we're focusing a lot on, you know, automation and getting more leverage out of our the tools that we have, scaling the impact of individuals. So that seemed like a high impact opportunity. But product management is an interesting one, because that only affects it's like a small population at the organization, but innovation is such a huge priority for us right now. And I think innovation starts in large part, like, with product managers themselves. So it felt to me like, if this is a problem we can really solve, there's going to be a big impact for the company. So even though it was a wide problem, but it was fairly thin in terms of the actual audience. So I think, you know, looking at wide, looking at impact, and then kind of force ranking them and knowing, you know, I can go after two, three, maybe four problems. And then you have to make those choices, and then kind of socializing them back with some of the people that you talked with.
What I love about that is, you know, you're asking business people about their business problems. You know, how's business? What's keeping you up at night? All those might be, they're great topic starters, but it's what comes there. I mean, it's about shaking the tree, isn't it? You know, fruit's going to fall, and it's not being scared that you don't recognize the fruit or you don't know what to do with it. But if you keep the conversation about what's actually important, then you can make a demonstrable difference. And I'm sure you found that, because someone says to you, well, I'm worried we're not meeting our SLAs. That's what's keeping me up at night. What SLAs are they? Well, these here. Oh, can you just show me? Can you show me the data? You have a look at that data and you say, oh, wow. Okay, so what should it be? Okay, there. Who's responsible for this? You've got your ground zero. You've got your evaluation staring you in the face. You've got your actors and the people you're seeking to influence right there and then. You take that to the people that you're seeking to influence and you have a conversation. No one's going to be turning up to a workshop or reading a newsletter and saying, the newsletter didn't work. They're going to be saying, we are all talking about the same thing. You doing this work, or you transitioning, or you upskilling so that you can either do the work differently to achieve the same results, or do the work differently to achieve different results. It's only about the work, and it's only about the doing. I mean, what response did you have from leaders by initiating those conversations, Gabe?
Well, they're very grateful to not be talking about learning. Like, I think learning is one of the most dangerous words in our profession, ironically, because it subtly makes us think that learning is sort of the end goal, but learning is just the means to an end. You know, I think actually a lot of my lean training has helped, because I feel like I speak the language of business a lot better as a result of it. So I think they were grateful to be having a business conversation. They felt like, you know, we were really focusing on what mattered to them. But it also, when you start with business, you're the learning expert.
Yeah.
In a way, like it kind of, I don't know how to say this. It sort of partitions the conversation, right? Like, let's talk about your area of expertise. And it sort of tacitly leaves learning to be my area of expertise, right? Because then, and I'm giving myself the material that I need to then respond to those business needs and say, so, you know, what I'm starting to imagine is maybe this approach or maybe that approach. Let me do a little bit more research, but you get to kind of present your case and you start to assume that role of trusted advisor, I think, much more naturally.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. And Gabe, automation's been a big part of your approach, as you mentioned at the start, through necessity. Could you explain your automation stack and how it's experienced for both you and your L&D team, as well as your customers, the employees?
Yeah, sure. So I think there are like two main parts to our stack. One is our learning experience platform called Loop, and another is the MS Office suite. We're a Microsoft shop here, but particularly Power Automate that runs kind of strings all those things together. Mm. So Loop has been a huge asset for us from a digital marketing standpoint, in many other ways, but that definitely stands out. So we're able to run like drip campaigns, email campaigns, automated campaigns for messaging. So we do like email blasts through that for our newsletters. We use user groups in the same way that, you know, a marketing firm would manage mailing lists. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of cross promote things to different mailing lists that are aligned to key interests. We use relative campaigns, which are sort of individually triggered drip campaigns, right? For things like onboarding. So every time someone's new to the organization, we add them to a particular group, and that sets off a chain of communications with resources and things like that to them and to their manager. And you can get quite savvy with it in terms of the different people that you're touching. So, you know, and those are things that were traditionally done manually, like let's get everyone into a room. Mm. Let's show them a PowerPoint about what life is like here at ETS. And it just takes like 10% of the time now to pull that off. So that's been huge and really enabled us to kind of like contact the right people at the right time. Mm-hmm. And then we also use the events tool in that. That's been big for our meetups. It's basically like Eventbrite for within an organization. So it handles all the like enrollment, mm-hmm, and the attendance and the reminders, and it gets things onto people's calendars automatically. And that was also a huge administrative hassle for us prior to that. So Loop's been great with automations for those types of things. We use MS Office a lot as well. And like I said, Power Automate. So, and maybe I'll give a couple of examples to kind of illustrate how this works. Mm. So newsletter signups is one of the things that we need to automate. Or I shouldn't say that we need to automate. It's just, it was a lot of administrative hassle and we preferred not have to do the administrative hassle. So, whip a little automation on it. So we have a SharePoint site that we use. It's like our marketing site, kind of. If we were a business, this would be our marketing site, right? Mm-hmm. It's everything that we do. And in the corner, like most sites, there's a little newsletter sign up, right? Get insights delivered to your inbox once a month. And so users can sign up for any one of our different newsletters right there. And that will take them to a SharePoint list where they can just sort of put in their email and click a button. And what that does is that triggers an automation flow that we've built through Power Automate. And we do not know how to code. This is all kind of no code platform stuff. And so that automation sends an alert to a Teams channel that we have. Hmm. And that alert includes a link to the Loop group that we use for that mailing list. So we get the alert immediately. We click on the link. It takes us right there and we add their email address and they're on the newsletter list. It's very simple, but it takes about 30 seconds. Hmm. But it used to like take way longer than that. I mean, it could be days before people got added to the newsletter list because it was in this inbox and that inbox and you're chasing things around. So that's one kind of flow of automation. Let me tell you one more that I think is even more powerful that we use with enrollment for a lot of our offerings. So again, you know, we think of our offerings like a business. We try to have marketing pages for each one of our offerings to describe what it is. Mm. So we'll have a SharePoint page for the decision-making training for managers, for instance, right? And that's like a marketing site. People go there, they read all about it. Maybe there's a promo video that we made and it kind of helps them figure out if it's the right thing for them. Again, we're trying to draw people out of the woodwork and screen them in the right way. And if they say, you know, this sounds good to me, they click on a link, it takes them to a form and they can sign up. And we've put a lot of kind of like tough questions in there that help set expectations and really sharpen their focus. And it's kind of nice because it's a bit of a barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. And so we've noticed a lot fewer drop-offs as a result of having to like think deeply about why do I want to take this training, right? And then once they fill that out and they click submit, again, it triggers an automation and that sends an approval to their manager. Sometimes it's an approval. Usually it's just a notice. And that's great because now you've got the manager involved and they're like, oh, hey, this person is taking it upon themselves to like go through this training. They should get some recognition. You can support them. It'll add the user to an Excel sheet that we use to track all of our attendees, the different cohorts and different trainings and stuff. So it helps with like data analysis down the line. And then it alerts us as well, because we love to know when someone signs up for one of our products. It's like banging the gong in the sales office, right? We can kind of adjust, we can monitor signups as they, you know, over time, and then adjust our marketing as needed. Mm-hmm. So if we're not getting enough signups, we'll double the promotion. If we've suddenly got to capacity, we'll cancel that last promotion so it doesn't go over. And like, we've literally done nothing so far. We set up the automation, but all of this is happening via software. So that gives us a ton of time back to do things like run meetups and design new offerings and things like that.
And do you have any indication of how much time you think you saved? I mean, you mentioned at the beginning that that you've gone down from a team of 10 to you and your colleague, Michelle, now. So do you have any indication of how much time automation might be saving you, either on a daily, weekly, or yearly basis?
Oh man, that's a great question. I mean, I would say back of the napkin, mm-hmm. it's probably a full-time position.
Wow.
I mean, that's a sort of cynical way to look at it. I'd say like, but that's kind of what it was. If you add it all up, it probably would have taken one person kind of always doing all the administrative tasks to, you know, manage newsletter signups and manage enrollments and track all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, and if any learning and development administrators are listening right now, I would be less fearful of losing your job to automation than optimistic about what you might be doing as a result, because I think that what you've described, Gabe, as in when you are consulting with the business and you're both analyzing and exploring what the real needs are, it is a lot more work up front. And then it takes some work to develop custom solutions, because the alternative, which is don't do analysis and buy off the shelf solutions, requires you then to continually try to figure out ways of getting people to your content and your platform that people know doesn't deliver the value, just so that you could justify the investment. One way, the way you're describing, by eliminating the administration as much as you can, and then elevating the humans to do good human work, is fulfilling work. And the other one, which I did a great deal of during my time in-house, is largely soul destroying. And you know that you're flogging a dead horse, because when people and employees aren't using your platform and content, they know why. And then we come up with all the silly answers about what we think that the reasons that they don't, which I've explored too many times in this podcast, again. But could you give us a real example here? I mean, you run a Foundations of Management program, and I wonder how you incorporate what we've been talking about here into that, with whether it'd be problem driven, digital marketing delivery, and automation. Are you able to give us an example?
In fact, Foundations of Management is a great example. This is a program that's, I think, primarily built and delivered by my colleague, Michelle Laguerre, who's a learning program lead here. So she gets most of the credit on this. But, we have this need to build a management culture that's sort of like rigorous, consistent, and effective here. And so we thought about who the target customers might be for really like culture building around management. And so we targeted new managers who have, you know, less than 2 years experience or felt a little kind of insecure in their management skills. But we also saw a lot of lifelong learners, if you will. We call them lifelong learners as our sort of customer segment, that are, you know, experienced managers, but they want to brush up on fundamentals. They sort of see management as an art that you're kind of always practicing and developing. So we felt those two were the where we could get like the biggest ROI in terms of culture change, right? And we had some hardcore like design I don't know why I said hardcore, core, just core, some central design principles. One was that it had to have a strong intellectual foundation because we didn't want it to crumble after a bunch of people got into it and realized that it wasn't much. So we found Google's Project Oxygen framework, which you can Google. You can Google Google's Project Oxygen. It's great, but it goes through 10 behaviors of really effective managers. It's very research focused and it's stood the test of time for us. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel. We chose to really focus on action over abstraction. So we then found resources that are related to these behaviors that were simple, big ideas that people could try out in their daily lives right away. Things like psychological safety or Andy Grove's black box. We wanted to maximize time freedom as well because managers tend to be time poor. So we wanted to minimize any like centralized scheduling that we had to do. There's no way we're going to get a bunch of managers together every week for a lot of time. And then lastly, we wanted to make sure that it was cohort based. We wanted it to be social. We wanted managers to help find some perspective and create context. And we were trying to build culture. So we needed to have discussion and engagement and create kind of networks of trust. So we automated the enrollment process, much like I just described. And then we built like a weekly experience around this. So in each week, we introduce a new behavior and the resources around that. And we use, you know, we use our campaign tools and event management tools within Loop to do that. So like on Monday, there's an email that goes out that introduces this week's behavior and it shares the resources for that week. You know, those big, powerful ideas, but not too many. So it's, I don't know, it's 15 to 30 minutes worth of content. And they have until Wednesday to go through that content in whatever time works for them. And they love that. They find it 10 minutes here, 15 minutes in their calendar there, in between their meetings. So it's very flexible. And there's a few automated reminders to help nudge them along the way. On Wednesday, we then all get together as a cohort to discuss those ideas in a very kind of social setting. And it focuses very much on the manager's individual experience, kind of past, present, and future. Have you seen this behavior in the past? What would you like it to be in the future? And there's lots of breakouts and small groups and sharebacks and stuff. So, so that's always a really rich, engaging discussion. It's the part that people say they like the most. But it only takes an hour and it leads to, a commit at the end of it, which is a sort of public statement of an experiment that they want to run. So I really believe strongly in tinkering with ideas. It's the best way to learn. And so we say, like, I want you to look at your calendar and your to-do list for the upcoming week. And I want you to find something on there that could use this behavior or this big idea and tell us what you're planning to do and what you think might happen. Right. So it's basically a hypothesis, but it helps sharpen their focus. And so then on Thursday, they go off and they start to do that stuff. And then on Friday, they get another final message saying, hey, we'd like you to write a tip to a new manager on this particular behavior. So now they're kind of sitting in that teacher's role, right? The best way to learn something is to try and teach it. And so then they have to try and articulate that back. So that whole weekly process takes like an hour of our time to, and it's really just to facilitate the discussion. Everything else is automated. It took us a while to build it, but once it's built it, you know, we can kind of crank it out. And then at the end of that 10 weeks, we have like a commencement ceremony where, you know, the whole cohort gets together and in small groups, they present sort of the impact that it had, their big insights, the changes they've noticed in themselves and in their team. And we invite a lot of people to that. You know, their managers come, a lot of alumni will come back. And that tends to serve, first of all, it's like exciting and it's a big deal. So they take it more seriously. They prepare for it, but it also is like marketing for the course. Right. And we always get a few signups like right after that commencement ceremony, like, oh, I should really do this. Or I'm going to tell three of my friends about it. And then after that, we add them to an alumni group, for other people. And we've put 150 people through the program, now in the past 10 months, 12 months, something like that.
Yeah, brilliant. And you mentioned a concept earlier, and I wonder whether that's used in that program. You called it Hitch a Ride on Your Day Job. Can you explain what this is and how it works?
Yeah. So this is something that I developed at Cultivate Me, and kind of brought here. I don't know how profound it is. Like, it really comes out of the retro tradition of like agile, but it's very influenced by constructivism and kind of the 70-20-10 and other models. But the bottom line question is like, how do I make learning relevant to people, right? Because they're not going to engage with something that they don't care about, that doesn't seem important to them. And I think learning is always frustrated by this need to like replicate environments or to create like fake experiences to kind of heighten the learning. And the bottom line is that like the world is your practice room, right? Every day you have the opportunity to try out new ideas, new techniques, new approaches. Every day you're encountering challenges or frictions or setbacks, or experiencing like small wins and successes and things are going well, but these things pass us by because we're too busy getting to the next meeting or the next item on our to-do list. So hitch a ride on your day job is just about carving time out for conscious reflection, like before and after your work event. So I think the commit concept that I just described is a good example of that, right? Finding something specific, or reflecting on, you know, why it's important to you. What do you want to do differently? What do you expect to happen? You know, here's a tension I'm feeling. Here's how I'm going to try and reduce it. And then conscious reflection on the back end of that, right? Like, what happened? What did I notice? Why did I notice that? And just these small little reflections that take minutes can have, you know, I don't have data on this, but it feels to me like it kind of doubles the impact of the learning. Because if like you didn't pay attention to it at all, you're probably not going to learn anything, not consciously anyway. But if you just take a few minutes to really recognize and articulate what you noticed and what you might try differently next time, I think your growth accelerates tremendously. So the material that people need for their growth is very often sitting right on their calendar and their to-do list.
Yeah, well, the growth they need to encounter is only really exists where they're working. So, I've said many a time, no one's ever been promoted for what they know or what they've learned. It's only ever what they do. So I think it truly is asking them to reflect on the impact of what they're doing on the work itself, on the stuff that actually matters. Now, Gabe, as we come to the end of the podcast, I'm sure you've piqued the interest of the listener. So how would you recommend they get started with, you know, what you've described here with lean learning? Because there are so many teams who are experience learning and development in their functions as you do, as one person outfits or just a couple of people. But then, you know, the way that you focused on problem solving, on digital marketing and automation, what would your advice be if somebody's at the beginning of the journey that you've described?
Yeah, good question. I would say first start thinking of yourself as a business and then ask the questions that a business would ask, to try and step out of that L&D frame for just a little bit. And so, you know, those questions are like, who are our customers? What problems do we solve for them? What are our offerings? If we put them into a portfolio, what would that look like? How do we reach our customers? Like, what are the channels of communication or delivering value? I actually made a video walkthrough of our L&D business model a while ago using a business model canvas. Maybe I'll put that on LinkedIn, but I think that's a useful frame that we've used a lot to just sort of shift our perspective, on what we do. So that's the first one. Start thinking of yourself as a business. I would say start conversation and build community. Mm-hmm. Find channels for asynchronous discussion around topics of interest, whether that's Slack or Teams, meetups, like create spaces and events to bring people together and create connections. The thing that a lot of, there I go with the grand statements, it's easy to forget that employees are adults who solve all sorts of complicated problems by themselves in their lives. And if you just get them together and get them talking, they will likely come up with a great solution, right? Yeah. So I think just finding ways to bring people together, and that's a huge source of research for you as well, right? Third, I would say think in terms of time cost. And really ask yourself, like, what are customers paying for your offerings currently? Do you have any low-priced entry-level offers? Or is it all like the platinum diamond membership takes 3 days, right? And then start experimenting with like different price points, so to speak, and bundles. You know, how might we solve problem X in a few minutes or a few hours or a few days, right? And then the last one, I guess, would be just start investigating automation. There's a ton of tools out there for it. You know, check out Power Automate if you're a Microsoft shop. There are other tools like Zapier or IFTTT, which I believe stands for If This Then That. Mm-hmm. There's even like some really cool no code platforms like bubble.io where you can like build your own apps without knowing how to code. But find an automation tool and build like the simplest automation you can. Mm-hmm. And there you go. Like you're off to the races. Just iterate from there and you'll find all sorts of uses for it.
Wonderful. And yeah, right at the end there, give it a go. There's a list of products. Go and give it a go. And that's how we'll learn. Well, Gabe, this has been hugely insightful and an approach to learning and development that looks to solve real problems, as you've stated, and is laser focused on achieving outcomes with limited resources. I think it's a true inspiration. So it was all left for me to say, Gabe, is thank you very much for being a guest on the Learning and Development Podcast.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, David.
Necessity is the mother of invention, and what Gabe has developed with his team at EDS is an inspiration to others. Should you wait until your back is against the wall to explore new, more efficient and more effective ways of achieving the aims of your function? Too often, business as usual and meeting expectations of stakeholders leads us to maintain a questionably effective status quo. Lean approaches to solving real problems and using automation make sense and demonstrates actual value. I think we've been shown a window into the future today. If this conversation has whet your appetite for good quality L&D chat and you'd like to get involved, you can now join the L&D Collective, of which I'm an active member. Join me and hundreds of L&D peers via the link to the L&D Collective in the show notes. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, perhaps to suggest topics you'd like to hear discussed, you can tweet me at David in Learning and connect on LinkedIn, for which you'll find links in the show notes. And goodbye for now.